May it please the court, my name is Charles Stearman. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Dr. J. Preston. We are asking this court to overturn the magistrate's decision of two causes of action, one for sexual discrimination and the other for tortious interference with contract, so that Dr. Preston may present his case to a jury for their consideration.
Mr. Stearman, you know, your brief certainly hints at some sort of personal relationship between Hamilton and Trocheck. But what I was wondering is this. Wouldn't such a relationship hinder rather than help your case? Because promoting one's friend or paramour may be unseemly and unethical, but it does demonstrate a preference for hiring women over men, and it doesn't violate Title VII, does it?
If you're correct, Your Honor, if these are almost alternative causes of action, depending on what took place in Mr. Trocheck's apartment, they have said they did not have sex. I think the record is replete with rumors since mid-1999 that they were having a relationship. It's all over the depositions, and even Mr. Trocheck admits it in his that he had heard of these rumors and what was going on. If the purpose of hiring Dr. Hamilton was because of what took place in his apartment late at night, it would not satisfy Title VII. We would then be left with a tortious interference where his motive is clearly improper. He is made.
Why isn't that something between him and the fund? I don't understand why that creates a cause of action.
I think
or put differently, why wouldn't the fund be an indispensable party to that? I mean, what if they're content with him?
It's the point you made in Rice versus Nova, which is, doesn't the employer himself have a cause of action? If he has, and they have admitted.
No, look, what if the employer knows that Trocheck maybe concealed something from the board and advanced his girlfriend or something like that, but they're pleased. They think Hamilton is fine. So if there's a wrong, it's a wrong to the company. I don't understand what that would have to do with why that would create a right in Preston.
It would also be a wrong to Dr. Preston.
No. You're saying it's interfering with his contract with the company. Well, he's an employee at will. They fire him. Suppose they fire him because maybe the board likes Linda Hamilton. I suppose. What would that have to do with? There's a lot of intrigue and backbiting and promotions in companies, and the notion that every one of these can be turned into a lawsuit, I think it'd be very disruptive for companies.
Yes, Your Honor. I think there's a number of points. First, it has been admitted that he is a better dentist and a better administrator.
That's irrelevant.
Well.
Look, the fund, he was fired. The fund, you may think I'm sure he's a better dentist. The question is, he's an administrator. He runs an operation that's losing money, so he's fired. Nothing's more common. And someone is put in his place who may not be as good, may have been put in for improper reasons. But I don't understand how that creates a tort right.
Well, in
and for all we know, the fund, the employer, is perfectly content with what happened.
Well, the fund never got to know that he had created the economic report that would change the department.
That's right, and if the fund doesn't like that, it can fire Trocheck and it can rehire Preston.
They have. I mean, Mr. Trocheck is no longer there.
Right.
But I think in the context of...
Why haven't they reappointed... Why didn't they fire Hamilton and reappoint Preston when they found out everything that occurred?
I don't know that they ever knew or...
Well, they know now, surely.
Through their attorneys that the report was generated.
Well, so why don't they hire Preston if Preston... Look, what's the wrong to the fund? If the fund isn't complaining about any of these monkey shines... How can you have tortious interference?
Well, I don't think it's the wrong to the fund. I think it's the wrong to Mr. Preston, Dr.
But Preston has no rights against the fund, setting aside your Title VII case. If it were pure
right, it would be
tortious interference.
Against Mr. Trojan. Correct.
So not against the fund.
Right.
But suppose the fund is content with Trojak's having fired Preston. Maybe they don't like Trojak anymore, but they're content with his having fired Preston. Now they know everything. So where's the wrongdoing?
Well, they could bring in the trustees or some of the other people and say, we knew everything that was going on. He wasn't acting contrary to our interests. None of that has happened. I think they put in 3 or 4 affidavits from the chief financial
officer. Why haven't they rehired Preston?
I think probably... I can't answer why.
What is Preston doing now?
He went out to start his own practice and is trying to build his practice up. It's hard to do after 23 years working for an organization. Our loss showed, our economist said, as you pointed out in Rice, there was no loss in that case. In this case, our number is $750,000 this man lost by staying with the fund for 23 years. And
somewhere in the briefs, the appellees have said that Dr. Preston, while holding this position, was also running his own private practice.
He was allowed to do that for 8 hours a week, and he did do that. Now, his choice when he got his MBA, which he got at the behest of the fund, was should he go out and consult or should he try and start his own practice? At his age, it isn't easy. Practice is just building up people.
How old is he?
51, I believe.
How old was Trojak?
I'm not sure. I believe mid-50s.
How old is Linda Hamilton?
30-something, young 30s. But you're correct that the cause of action is, or the argument is that he was wrong. I mean, he was hired. I think an essential element of tortious interference is that, as put in, I think Mendelsohn was the case, and we're not suggesting to go as far as Mendelsohn, that the motive, which is one of the elements, has to be different than I'm trying to do what my employer says. But it would also have to be that the employer doesn't like it. There's been no suggestion that they ever knew about this during that period of time, this report that was stolen from him, or that they would have put up with, had the trustees known there was whatever was going on in the apartment, would have put up with it. I can't imagine why the fund would...
Well, they know now. Your theory is they were wronged by Trojak.
And I think they took action.
But why aren't they joining your tort suit against Trojak?
Or bring him back. But I think that would be an admission.
An admission of what?
Mr. Trojak was not, and Ms. Hamilton.
How would that affect the fund?
Well, they're all by one counsel.
Wouldn't affect the tort claim.
It would affect that of both Mr. Trojak and...
No, you got it backwards. You just said it was either or.
The Title VII is the fund.
It was either Title VII or the tort. So why doesn't the fund join? The fund is the victim of the tort. It may be the guilty person of the Title VII, but it's the victim of the... It's one of the victims.
It's one of the victims.
So why doesn't it just join you in the tort suit against Trojak? That kills your Title VII case.
Well, they're represented by one counsel, and it would be a conflict for him to throw one against the other.
No, it wouldn't.
Well, Mr. Trojak would certainly object if he got cut loose.
Oh, you mean Trojak is represented by the same... Well, of course, you'd need another lawyer.
You'd have to send a reservation of rights.
I mean, your whole point is that the fund and Trojak have a conflict of interest.
Yes, I think that Mendelsohn says...
You have a conflict of interest because of your tort claim.
Yes. And Mendelsohn makes clear... In Mendelsohn, the majority stockholder, which is the... He basically owned the company. And the president of the company got together, and they fired the general manager. In that, I don't know how there could be a conflict of interest, because the majority of the stockholder and the president of the company are the company. But in that case, the court said this person was obviously replaced by somebody less qualified, and it was an improper motive. And they let that case go to the jury. So Mendelsohn goes much further than where we are.
Now, I don't see, actually, your Title VII case at all. What is the evidence that Trojak discriminates in favor of women? He maybe discriminates in favor of Linda Hamilton, but as Judge Rovner said, that's a personal... That's personal.
The magistrate did not mention in her decision what I thought was an important part, which is the comments of the chief financial officer of the company and the human resources director that Bruce Trojak is building a harem. He brought on at least three or four women around him who had not been in positions prior to that, and he was a big shot. He liked to surround it. He rented out major halls, Miller Park, for a big party. He rented out the museum.
What are these, media beauties or something?
Yes, and he liked to
they
surround
are?
Himself
yeah,
with...
I mean, there's something about their pulchritude.
Yes.
Is
so,
there?
So if they...
Is there evidence that these are... He promotes beautiful women because he wants to be surrounded by beauties.
I haven't seen any of them. I have never met the women. So I
beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
That should have been my answer.
What's the motive that you assigned to him?
He likes to surround himself with a harem.
What if they're all middle-aged or older women?
I beg your pardon.
What kind of harem
I've
is that?
I've got to tread very carefully
kind of
here, Your Honor.
No, I don't understand you, really. Look, usual cases in which men are discriminating in favor of women is either that, you know, it's some kind of affirmative action plan or pressure, which is not involved here.
Yes.
Or, you know, it's traditional women's jobs. So they think, well, nurses should be women or elementary school teachers should be. That's not involved either. These women who were given raises are administrators. That's not a distinctively woman's job. So what is the motive? I mean, I can understand if somehow he's just promoting a lot of bimbos or something to create some cloud of, you know, he thinks he's Hugh Hefner or something. But that doesn't seem to be involved either. So what's the motive? I don't understand.
According to the human resources director, he liked to surround himself with women. And he gave them 50% raises when everybody else was getting 1.5%, which is in our brief. That was the motive for wanting Hamilton, who'd been at his apartment on many occasions, who he'd promised the job.
But why is he promoting other women if he's fascinated with Hamilton?
Well, there were other...
What's the logic of it? Does he have a whole string of girlfriends?
There was another woman who had a key to his apartment who got a 50% pay raise. So, I think I should reserve any further time for rebuttal. But.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stearin.
Thank you.
Ms. Solden?
May it please the court, my name is Naomi Solden. I'm here on behalf of all the defendants, the Wisconsin Health Fund, Linda Hamilton, and Bruce Trojak.
Could you clarify just one of the disputed facts?
Sure.
On what date did the defendants claim the decision to terminate Dr. Preston was made?
The evidence shows that Bruce Trojak testified that the decision was made in late 2000. I don't know the exact date. It was in December. He said that the decision was made then. He wasn't certain. It was an absolute decision, but it was a fairly certain decision. And he maintained that until the end. I mean, that was when it was made. That was when the team had a meeting and decided to go in a different direction.
Why did he give these people these huge raises when the whole fund was in financial jeopardy?
I think that he did a market analysis. He believed that that the fund lacked good leadership, and he wanted.
If it lacked good leadership, why are you promoting why are you giving big raises to management? Why aren't you firing them and maybe hiring new people at high salaries? But why pay the people who failed?
But he didn't. These people didn't. Like Mike Lovely, who became the finance director, he raised from $43,000 to $90,000. Mike Lovely never was the finance director until Bruce came there. Bruce saw he believed he saw potential there, and felt that he was way underutilized and underpaid, and promoted him to that position. Mike Lovely is the guy that runs the fund now.
I understand. So he was promoted in the sense of given another job.
Right, and most of the people were.
They were given new jobs rather than just raised in their...
Right. Yeah. I don't think there were people that were really just given raises. It was men and women. It wasn't just females. And a few of the females that were highly paid were also new people. Pretty much, actually, the head of every single department was replaced. You know, Dr. Preston, head of dental, the head of the medical center was replaced, finance, every single department head was replaced.
Are there statistics about how many men and women there are and how many received across the whole fund, not just the dental?
Yes.
The whole clinic.
Those are all in the appendix. Shows all the salaries, what they went to, and how many people were laid off.
You know, your brief states a few times that Dr. Preston submitted his business plan only after the management team made its termination decision.
Right.
But Dr. Preston did submit his business plan before he was actually terminated.
Oh, yeah.
So it's possible, isn't it, that the management team could have changed its mind if they'd seen the business plan and agreed with the proposal?
Well, they did see the plan, and they didn't agree. You know, that's something that the plaintiff keeps saying, that it was exactly what Trojak wanted. That's not it at all. In fact, on page 5 of the appendix, which is part of Trojak's deposition transcript, he says, "You're putting words in my mouth. It wasn't exactly what I wanted. It was too, for one thing, it was too late, and it didn't deal. It dealt only with basically two areas. It dealt with reducing the staff and changing the benefits, which they were already in the process of doing. It didn't deal with many of the other problems. Not having the two-chair, three-chair dentistry, the scheduling problems, the inventory control, all of these problems. So it was far from exactly what he wanted. And the management team did see the report. The trustees didn't necessarily see the report, but the trustees didn't make the termination decision. They were not involved. The trustees aren't involved in that level of day-to-day control.
During Preston's tenure, apparently this fund lost a substantial amount of money, and it's difficult for me to even comprehend. It went from, what, $45 million to $3 million or something?
And less.
What?
It actually went down to under $3 million at one point. It almost closed. It was almost closing.
What was the $45 million? What was that? Was that some kind of an endowment or something?
No. It was just over the years, the fund built up reserves and had investments.
Okay, so it's the reserves, actual cash reserves, and they went through all 40-some million.
Most of it was medical claims, because there was just a huge rise, as you know, in the last 5 years in medical costs. They had very high medical costs. So that it was primarily the medical costs. And
so
then there was some investment income.
$5 for a call or something, or whatever it was, your service, and obviously costs a lot more than that. So basically he's being terminated for that failure, I suppose. Isn't that basically what this comes out?
They terminated him for failing to cut the costs and make changes, and then they didn't feel that he had the attitude to go forward in the direction they wanted to go forward in. And it wasn't just the dental, you know, the whole fund. They have a medical clinic, a dental clinic, and they also have, there are people that don't get the medical services at the fund. They can go out to private doctors and dentists.
And they charge.
And then they pay for it.
I presume.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
But was Preston in charge of, was the $45 million under his domain?
No. He was in dental and.
So he can't be blamed for losing $40 million then?
Not at all. No, he lost $1 million in 99. The dental department was down $1 million. But.
So somebody else has lost the other $40 million.
Right. But I mean, part of it was just medical claims went up. Bruce Trojak isn't there anymore. I think that the trustees became unhappy with his direction. It didn't have anything to do with terminating Preston, but just the way the money was handled.
Mm.
And now the fund's doing pretty well.
Well, that's good.
I don't really have any need to go through the facts in my brief or the arguments in my brief. If you don't have any other questions, I'll let it go.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Okay. Mr. Stearman, how much time do you have? 1 minute? Why didn't Preston's business plan address this issue of the chairs, which, I mean, it does sound, you know, sensible to have multiple chairs so that the dentist doesn't have to be sitting around while the patient is having his teeth cleaned.
This was this dental plan was unique in the world. Mr. Trojak admitted that. This was originally the Teamsters fund, and these were truck drivers that would come off the road and expect service. And they had to have people around there. I would dispute what she said, that they lost.
You're not responding to my question.
He felt that they could provide better service by single chair dentistry in case it became busy.
How could that be better service? I don't understand. The more chairs you have, the more service you can provide. The chairs are a constraint.
But you might hold people up, too.
I don't understand that with the chairs. That depends on the number of dentists. I don't get you.
The two-chair dentistry was one dentist doing two chairs at once.
Okay, look, you have 9 dentists, right?
Yes.
And 9 chairs.
Yes.
Right?
I'm not sure about the 9 chairs, but yeah.
Well, but Preston wanted to lay staff off, didn't he?
Yes.
And so if you had 6 dentists, you'd have 9 chairs. That would be better, right?
Yes.
So why doesn't he discuss that issue of the chairs?
I think he was much more worried about what the point that there was a $1 million loss. This was a capitated plan. The economics of it were such that there was no revenue coming in. And in the first budget, which was the year 2000, he said, well, if we're going to have a budget, what should I use for revenue? And they said, use the capitation fee. And he went, well, my gosh, if we use that, we're going to lose $1 million a year.
So what did he want to do?
What he wanted to do was first take the revenue or the fair market of what their services were to judge whether they were efficient. That was the first thing he wanted to do.
Well, that doesn't do anything for anything.
That was his point to Mr. Trojak.
So, all right, so get to the point, right? So
yeah.
What did he want to do that would make a difference?
Change the benefits. In the end, they had to increase the revenue coming in and decrease the services. Because if somebody could, they could have done $5,000 worth of dental if they wanted to in the plan. They put a $1,500 cap, a higher copay, and the demand dropped dramatically. And that's exactly what they did to solve the problem. And they used his plan in the appendix to do it.
Before, they were paying about $5 for lots of service, right?
You could walk in and get a $600 crown for $5, and they were going to lose money at that. There's no question about it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And Ms. Soldam.